Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/acast. That's burrow.com/acast. burrow.com/acast.
Hi everyone, welcome to episode 34 of Concussion Chats. My name is Taya. Concussion Chats is a podcast hosted by the McGill students for the Concussion Legacy Foundation with the help of Nick from Concussion Talk Podcast. We are dedicated to providing strength and hope to those recovering from concussions through sharing experiences. Today I have a recording of our guest speaker, Elisa. Elisa has been living with PCS for the past 5 years due to a wrong place, wrong time accident with a tennis ball. During the pandemic, she started blogging in hopes of encouraging and educating others with her story.
Yeah, hi, I'm Elisa. My pronouns are she, her. I wish I could say I had a concussion a long time ago and that it no longer affects my life, but I'm still very much on my PCS journey. And because of that, I struggle with word finding and stumbling over my words, which is an interesting problem to have when giving a speech. And I suppose I could have written everything out ahead of time, but I didn't like that. So here we are. I want to talk to you today about how I went from a person who is suffering and miserable to a person who is suffering and content, even happy. Also, trigger warning, I will be talking about suicidal ideation. So if that's something that bothers you, please come back later. A little bit of context about me. I'm 27 and I'm from San Diego. Like Taya said, I've been living with PCS for 5 years. I volunteer 2.5 hours with refugee kids, helping them with school. And I'm so, so proud of that 2.5 hours. I wish it were more, but I'm super happy with it. And when I'm not volunteering, I am writing. And yeah, I blog to help encourage and educate other people with PCS or invisible illnesses. So if I were to describe my personality, I would use the Enneagram, if any of you are familiar with it. I resonate most with types 1 through 3. So 1 being the perfectionist, the person who believes that there's a right way to do everything and strives to do that. Type 2, the helper, person who feels the most fulfilled when helping others. And type 3, the performer. So basically the success-oriented person. So that's me. And that's who I was going into my concussion. After university, I decided to do an 11-month program where a group of 20-somethings would go to a country every month and partner with a different organization in each country. The first country that we went to was India, and I absolutely loved it. I didn't mind the things that other people minded, like living out of a backpack or no hot water or no Wi-Fi. I just loved helping people and using the gifts that I was given to help others. I would probably say that's the happiest that I've ever been. And 3 weeks into that, I got hit with a tennis ball in my right temple. I was eating with some friends, and some people over off to the side were tossing it back and forth. And I wasn't expecting it, and I got hit. I got whiplash. I don't really remember a lot of it, much to the chagrin of a lot of doctors. But it must have been thrown pretty hard, is all I can say. But I brushed it off, I think, like anyone would at the time. And then we switched countries. And then about a week later, I had my first migraine. I did not know what was happening to me. I thought maybe I was having an aneurysm or something. So I went to the hospital there, and luckily they did have one because we were in a bigger city. And they diagnosed me with post-traumatic migraine and gave me some meds and kind of sent me on my way. I struggled for a month, and I like hung on, and I was just hoping that things would get better and I would be able to like get back out on the field and with everyone else. But that's not the case. And I had to make the hard decision to return home to seek medical care. And that's probably the hardest decision I've ever made, and probably the most heartbreaking one. I like saying goodbye to everyone and going on that plane, I knew that I wasn't coming back. Like, I could feel it. And unfortunately, I was right. I disappeared into the room that I grew up in. I moved back in with my parents. So basically, I lived in a dark room. I don't know how long I stayed in there, because my memories are really fuzzy from that time. At some point, I did emerge from my room. And it was like waking up from the matrix. Everything was too bright. Everything was overstimulating. I had lost a lot of muscle definition and mobility from being in bed for however long. And basically life was sleep, eat, repeat, like an infant. So that was 2017, and probably the hardest year and most painful year of my life. I tried every doctor, every therapy, every medical device like my parents and I could think of, but I didn't have any change, and I still marked every box on that post-concussion scale. And I was in so much physical pain, just from like neck, back, head pain, and it was really hard to function. And at the same time, I was going through an identity crisis. I was thinking, if I can't write, if I can't dance, if I can't move my head, what good am I? And going back to those personality types I mentioned earlier, if I can't perfect something I'm working on, if I can't help anyone, if I can't perform, what good am I to society? What value do I have? Truth is, we all have value just by being on the earth. And that's something that they would have to take a while to learn, and something that I still have to remind myself. But by the next year, I was sick and tired of being sick and tired. And I hated that the best part of my day was when I got to go to sleep and have relief for that many hours, all just to do it all over again. And one day I went in for trigger point injections, which was just the latest thing that I was trying. And I knew right away that they didn't work. I felt the areas where I was numb, but I also felt the pain almost like radiating out, trying to like push through the numbness. And I just cried and cried all that day. And I was done. I didn't have a plan to commit suicide, because as a person, I've seen how that's affected my family in different ways and in my friends' lives, and I just wouldn't do that. But because of that, I felt so stuck. You know, I believe in heaven. So like, given the choice between my pain-filled life and heaven, like, yeah, duh. And I didn't have any hope of relief because nothing was helping and no one could say when all of this was over. So yeah, that's probably the lowest I've ever been. But I did tell my parents how I was feeling, and they called my therapist, who put me in something called an IOP, which in the States is an individualized outpatient program. And there they diagnosed me with major depressive and started me on medication. And this program I went for 6 months, 3 times a week for 3 hours each, which was a lot for me at the time, because I was barely leaving the house. But there I began to heal from the grief and the trauma of leaving that program so early, the trauma of even having a concussion and having my life interrupted, and the healing and the letting go of the person that I used to be. I think the hardest thing any of us have to do is really sit with ourselves and sit in our past pain and trauma and deal with it instead of running away. Because that's basically what I did my whole life up until this point. Because if there was anything hard, I would just focus on something else or brush it aside instead of actually dealing with it. My biggest takeaways from those 6 months were three things. The first thing is called radical acceptance. And yeah, like Taya said before, I'm not a professional. So obviously, if you want to look more into these things, please ask a professional, because I'm just sharing my personal experience. So radical acceptance is just accepting your current situation. You don't have to like it, but it's an effort to stop fighting it and stop wishing it were different and just accepting it. Second thing is mindfulness, which is, I call it separating yourself from the past and the future in order to just focus on the present moment. I gave myself a mantra that was, in this moment, I am okay. I am okay in this moment. And that's how I survived a lot of my pain-filled days where I was stuck in bed. Because one moment at a time was much easier to deal with than thinking about the future. And the last thing was just breaking out of my black and white thinking. Being a perfectionist, I was kind of an all or nothing person. And the idea that two seemingly opposing forces could be true at the same time was revolutionary. I kind of use these examples when explaining it, that I can be a good daughter and a great member of my family and not contribute to the household chores or cooking or in any like physical way that other people can see. Or I can be a great value to society and to the world at large without earning a paycheck. So those things before I would have thought that they don't go together, but life isn't black and white and we live in the gray. So for the first time in 2 years, I felt like me again, which was saying something, because previously I thought the only way I would feel like me was if I were able-bodied. But I guess mental healing, in my case, was more important than physical healing. I began to take comfort in things that had lost their comfort, like faith and spirituality. I started doing things I loved again, just in a different way and for less time, like watching TV, reading, dancing a little bit. I came to the realization that I could deal with anything as long as I prioritized my mental health and my spiritual life first. So I'm about to make a bold statement here, but I'm okay with being a person with a disability or in chronic pain for the rest of my life. I hope that's not the case, but I know that if it is, I'll be okay. There are days when I struggle to get out of bed because I don't want to face another day of my life. And that's when I'm focusing on everything bad in it and everything that I wish I could change, past, present, or future. But if I choose just to exist in this present moment and be thankful for even the tiniest thing, like the way that my cat meows at me, or the way that the sunlight hits at a certain hour, my life is easier. It's not easy, but it's easier. It sounds so simple, but I really think the difference between a suffering, miserable person and a suffering, happy person is perspective. Thank you.
Today I have Emily, who is also part of McGill Students for Concussion Legs Foundation, and Nick from Concussion Talk Podcast joining me. So what did you guys think of her share? I know the group, myself included, really enjoyed it. So what were your thoughts?
Emily, do you want to go ahead?
You go ahead.
Like, you're going to think now, right? No, I like her three takeaway points, kind of all linked together. I guess maybe in mindfulness it's separate, but I thought it was interesting. She called it radical acceptance, which I would just call it acceptance. I don't know what the radical means. How do anything separate? It sounds better to have an adjective in front of that, but it's just acceptance. But yeah, the mindfulness and the being a linger and thing, what was the term? It was acceptance, mindfulness, and
breaking out
of herself, yeah. Which is kind of acceptance, kind of like acceptance, letting yourself be
who you are. It was about breaking out of like the black and white thinking, like the perfectionism and stuff.
It's kind of like acceptance, that's in like that it's not that acceptance of reality, I guess, is kind of what I was going at there. But I will allow put the rest on Emily to say something because she's looking like she's not ready.
Yeah, Nick, I totally agree. Like, it is kind of this like, If you're accepting reality, then maybe you aren't in black or white thinking, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So radical acceptance is a skill that is taught in dialectical behavioral therapy.
Oh, okay.
That's where the radical comes from.
Oh, okay, thank you. So why is it radical? It's just acceptance.
Yeah, so like radical acceptance, I think, has been like the same idea is used across the board in a bunch of different things, right? But DBT, which is a type of therapy, it's a type of cognitive behavioral therapy.
DBT is what does that stand for?
Dialectical behavioral therapy.
And what is dialectical?
Yeah, so it was originally created to help treat borderline personality disorder. But since then, it's been used to, you know, treat things across the board from like bipolar. It's very good for emotional regulation. But a lot of therapists use different aspects of it in just like their standard treatment. So it's not really just for borderline personality anymore. But radical acceptance is one of the big things that is taught in DBT, as well as mindfulness. But you kind of need mindfulness to be aware of, you know, when you're radically accepting. And then it's so funny, I just did a group in the psychiatric unit on radical acceptance, and then I think the day before I did one on black and white thinking. So there are two things that are like, yeah, and black or white thinking is also called all or nothing, and that's that concept of like, you know, if I don't do this perfectly, then I have failed.
Yeah.
They're trying to right size it and be like, oh, well, can I just do it good enough? You know? Mm-hmm. Or how about I'm not going to fail if I don't do it perfectly, right? It's that, you know, one thing or the other, and how do we kind of right size and balance? And acceptance and mindfulness, yeah, all of this kind of like goes hand in hand. I think one of the important things about radical acceptance, though, and I think like through her story, she was saying this, but just to kind of like verbalize it, is it doesn't, acceptance doesn't mean that you love something.
No. Right?
And it doesn't mean that you're like approving it, right? Like if a traumatic thing happens to us and somebody's like radically accept, it doesn't mean you have to love it. It doesn't mean you have to approve it. It's just saying you're accepting the facts as they are.
Yeah.
That's all. That's what it means. And with that, like people, you know, when people aren't radically, like I struggled with it. If I don't radically accept that I do have exercise intolerance, right? If I don't radically accept that that's a reality and I just keep trying to deny that reality, then what happens is I keep going out and trying to run as if I don't have exercise intolerance.
I don't want to belabor the point, but why is that radical? Not just accepting. But
wait, can I just jump in?
Yeah, you do that because I have
to deeper. So first, I just want to point out that DBT is most often used for borderline personality disorder. Or not borderline, sorry. Borderline personality disorder and suicidal ideation. And by the sounds of it, that's why she went, was for that. Those are like the two most common, like that's what it's used for. Like last year in a class that I took, talked about that a bunch. And that's kind of like what it was created for. And also, but the like black and white thinking and like the, like I'm always saying, like the right sizing it, just like how in her example, she was talking about how like, you know, like she can be a good daughter and a great like family member and not contribute to household chores or like, be like, physically helping, and like she can be a great value to society, and like the world without earning a paycheck sort of thing, like. Just like the all or none thing, like Emily was saying. But yeah, I just want to say that thing about DBT first.
Okay.
But you can answer Nick's thing about acceptance.
And why is it called radical and not just acceptance?
Yeah, so I just Googled that. I'm not really sure like where the root of it comes from. But it's I think it radical just is meaning like
just it makes you think bigger,
like a full acceptance, right? We're not just like partially accepting, we're radically
I guess
accepting,
so.
Fully yeah. accepting. But it doesn't mean you have to be like happy about it.
No, right? No.
And it's oftentimes like it's not like a. Not a one-time thing, right?
It's like you're accepting your current situation and you don't have to like it, but like you're making an effort to stop fighting against it. Like you're just accepting that like that's where you are in the moment kind of thing. And taking it as it is kind of, you know. But the radical thing, I don't know. Let's look up the direct like where like meaning of relating to or affecting the fundamental nature of something, advocating or based on a person who advocates. Okay, so I don't know.
Anyway, it's not really important.
You're just like putting your like you're putting a lot of work into this like radical acceptance. Like it's not just like a half-ass acceptance. By these definitions, it seems like it's like a really like big effort is being put into it. You're not half-assing it. You're not just like kind of like sometimes, like you're just like trying to go all in and like really
I guess so. Try and that's on the point, I guess.
But I really liked how, but before she started telling us her story, she kind of went through like her the three things that she related to most in like the Enneagram, and how like perfectionist, helper, and performer were so big for her. And
she said in the thing where I didn't really pick up the Enneagram.
Yeah, and she said,
"What is that? I don't even know what it is."
It's a personality.
I know what an Enneagram is, but I don't know what an Enneagram is. That the
Enneagram.
Okay. Enneagram. Enneagram. Okay, but what's the Enneagram? Like, what did she just start listing off? She listed off the points, and but what is it? What is it? Enneagram for what? What is the Enneagram? Perfectionist.
The Enneagram is one of these personality test type things, and it characterizes people into really, you kind of fall into one of nine different things. And so like number nine is like the peacekeeper, peacemaker. Number two is the helper. And what's interesting about the Enneagram, it's really hard to guess people's Enneagram.
Can you fit in the multiple or just fit in this one?
Usually people fall into one and then they have wings. So like two will wing with a three or a one. So they might have some aspects of three, some aspects of one. But people's Enneagrams can change over time. The whole concept of the Enneagram is like when you have like your base state, which let's say it's a two, then when a two is feeling more healthy, they're going to move closer to the personality of an eight. And when they're like not necessarily doing what they need to do to take care of themselves, then they move closer to a four. Okay. But so it's like this weird mathematical thing. It's really interesting though.
I just think to a link, Nick, you can.
I was going to say, I'll ask a question about this all day.
Like Emily said, like the whole, like the two has like the wing of like, has wings of like one and three. That's exactly what Elisa was describing, like the perfectionist, the helper, and the performer. I liked how she just kind of like quickly brought that up beforehand to give us like a little idea of what she was like before, and who she was. And also the organization that she was involved in, that's a super cool.
Yeah, I was gonna say that sounds pretty cool.
So cool.
Do you know where is she when she, I've lost another video, but where is she when she went back to the States? Because she said she was in the hospital, she left India and then she went somewhere else.
I think she may have said it in the recording, but I don't remember. But it was, she'd gotten hit like 3 weeks in, and then I think she went home after like the end of like the second place that they were going.
You know where that was?
No, I don't remember. I think she mentioned it though, but
that's a cool organization though.
Definitely a super cool organization. Should have asked what it was. I think also just the way she was telling her story about like how like when she got home, like she just stayed in a dark room, you know, like people are always told to, which is wrong. And then she doesn't even know how long she stayed for. She was talking about how like she lost a lot of muscle and like mobility, and like I think she's the first person to share that's kind of like talked about that, which is super cool. Of course that would happen if, you know, like you're staying and you're just resting and not doing anything, you're gonna lose muscle and stuff. And I don't know, I thought that was cool that she mentioned that. And it's just another reason why doctors need to stop telling people to just sit in a dark room forever.
Yeah. I know, it's a simple thing to say, and this feels safe, a safe thing to say, like what can go wrong, but it's detrimental, I guess, in the long run. Just doing better. But so does she, has she been a long time participant in the group?
That was the first time she came to our group. That was the first time she came to the group, but everyone really enjoyed her share. Another thing that she'd said that I really like, I don't know, it just, she was talking about going through like an identity crisis through the whole thing, about how like she can't perform, like what value does she have to society, and just like the realization that like we all have value by like just being on like this earth, like that, like I was like, damn, like that's, I don't know, that's definitely something that I've struggled with, is just like being valuable, and the reminder that, you know, like we're all valuable no matter what. It's good, and it sounds like that program also just like really 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 helped her. The something else she mentioned was just like the mental healing was like more important than physical healing for her. That's super true. Like I've definitely kind of noticed the same thing for me, is like once you're doing better mentally, like the physical stuff isn't as horrible. Like it's not so unmanageable almost.
Yeah.
Because you're mentally like you're just in a better place. Like you can handle those things so much more.
It's not just there's physical, it's not just one more thing on your plate. It's just something you can kind of pretend that it'll pass likely. I mean, not everything will obviously, but I mean, it's not like just a minimal thing. Like, I mean, I got my second shot this week, which is a good thing, of the second dose. And so I was sick I got on Monday, so I was sick. I felt sick, I wasn't sick, but I still didn't feel good on Tuesday. But I was like, I was okay with that, just knowing that it's gonna pass. It's not like, it's not long term, it's something that I can, and before me, and even though you think that you know that it's, I know that's everything, because you know that it's just the causes, you know, stuff. But when your mind is more capable, more to understand like your whole situation, life in general, you know that everything is just, it doesn't sound kind of harsh, but everything is temporary. I mean, life is generally temporary, so it's like it's a series of temporary events, you know what I'm saying? So it's like, this sounds depressing.
I mean,
but you know what I mean? It's just like, it's not going to last forever, and don't get hung up on it.
It's definitely hard when you're in the thick of it to think of it like that. It's definitely not how, like you see it at all. Like I know when I was like really like at my lowest, like in the thick of everything, that like you, like anyone that said that to me is just like, fuck off, like leave me alone. And like, you know, but I definitely think like the mental healing is so important, because like then you have like the skills to cope with the things that are on your plate. Like you're able to like readjust the things, like redistribute, and you just have like, you have like your little toolbox of like coping mechanisms and like stuff like that, and you can just handle more. And that's not like forever and stuff. Like things like aren't forever and stuff, but like it's definitely not how I saw it. And like when I was in like really into it, but I think the mental stuff's super, super important.
I think it can be, I think that can become a tool though, is that this is temporary. This is just, you know, for today. I just think it takes, that's one of these tools that kind of takes a long time to build up. But that's definitely, there have been times in my life where, yeah, I couldn't see it like that at all. So like majority of the time that I was struggling. But currently it's easy for me when I'm in the, not easy, but when I'm in those moments, that is a thought that's constant, that comes up now, that's like, oh, this is temporary. Yeah, it really sucks. But did it take years to be able to build that mindfulness and build that thought up?
Exactly.
Yeah. But is it something that's extremely possible? Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm with Derek.
And I think it really depends who's saying it to you, because I mean, I was dismissed a lot. So if someone's gonna tell me it's only temporary, like it's blah blah blah, blah, and like it's not gonna last forever kind of thing, like get over it kind of vibes, obviously I'm gonna be pissed off. But I think as you heal, as you're like mentally healing, you can definitely like get to that spot where like it's only temporary, like this isn't gonna last forever sort of thing. Because now that I am doing better, I definitely am able to see that a lot more easily. Like it's not easy by any means, but it's more like it's easier to like
understand, comprehend.
No, I think I could, like, it's not that I couldn't comprehend. I think
just absorbing.
No, I think it's more just like believe like that, because I mean, I, like there was one point where like I was diagnosed with like major depressive disorder. So like, of course I'm like, I mean, I can comprehend the words you're saying, but I don't believe you. That's what it was. It was like the believing it. And even if like I did tell myself that, it's like, you're lying. Like, that's not true, you know? So I think as like you get better mentally, you can definitely use that as a tool. And it definitely is a tool that's really helpful. I also just, I mean, the whole group really appreciated just how we were able to talk about suicidal ideation and kind of not normalize like having suicidal ideation, just like talking about it. And what?
Your audio went, but now it's back, I think.
Oh.
Not
what was I saying?
Suicidal ideation, the group was happy.
Yeah, everyone really appreciated that. Like during the discussion, we all kind of brought up suicidal ideation and just how it was nice to hear her talk about it. Also just how by talking about it, it's also like you normalize it, but not normalize that like you have those feelings, but just that like a lot of other people have it too, and like you're not alone in feeling that way kind of thing. And it was definitely a really good productive discussion, and her share was really great. Everyone really really enjoyed it.
Cool.
Emily's gone, so all right,
she's back.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. It was a really good talk.
Yeah.
I could relate to it a lot.
Yeah. So thank you to Nick for helping us do the podcast. And thanks again to Lisa for joining us and sharing with the group. We'll have a new podcast posted Monday morning. Upcoming podcasts can be found on concussiontalk.com, Spotify, YouTube, and Apple Podcasts. You can find more information about our group on concussionmtl.com. Our free peer-to-peer support group is open to everyone, and we hold 4 weekly meetings on Zoom. Thanks for listening.
HeadCheck Health bridges gaps in concussion care through simple, powerful technology. Join organizations like the Canadian Football League, Trek Factory Racing, the Canadian Junior Hockey League, Eastern Washington University, and Volleyball Canada, who rely on HeadCheck to improve communication and optimize care. Visit headcheckhealth.com for more. The music at the beginning of this podcast is by Ben Sound, www.bensound.com.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.